State Studio, WGFX Gallatin Nashville, a Cumulus station. Our season never ends. Your home for Titans and Vols football. Trending now at 104.5 The Zone.
Good afternoon, I'm JT. College hoops from last night. Number 4, Illinois went on the road, blasted Michigan, winning 76-53. Both teams entered the night as number 1 seeds in Jerry Palm's bracketology. But after the loss, Palm moves the Wolverines to a number 3 national seed. Also last night, 12th-ranked Arkansas rolled South Carolina 101-73. Number 8, Alabama, a winner over Auburn 70-58. Ole Miss down Kentucky by 8, and LSU beat Vandy 83-68. Belmont returns to action tonight, taking on SIU Edwardsville in the quarterfinal round of the OVC tournament. Belmont has secured the 12th conference regular season championship in 16 years, 7th in a 9-year span throughout their OVC membership. Tip-off is at 7 o'clock. Preds had another slow start last night, fell 4-2 to Carolina. The 5-game homestand continues tomorrow night. Panthers in for a 2-game set. This update brought to you by ElectronicExpress.com. We make it happen. Breaking news at once on your home for the Titans and Vols. This is 104.5 The Zone.
The 3HL with Brent Daugherty and Don Davenport.
Great tell, 104.5 The Zone. Brent Daugherty, Don Davenport with you. Leviticus now in for JT. Hope you're having a great Wednesday. 1 year ago today, that tornado rolled through here. What was your experience with that thing? And here's the thing. That one hit Germantown, North Nashville, East Nashville, Mount Juliet, Cumberland County. But living here over the course of time, you've been in the path. I mean, it's just – and the hard thing about – Coach Mack was talking about Texas, and I lived in Texas also. Texas is flat, and you can see them coming to a certain extent. Here, you can't with all the hills and now the buildings. And
I also feel like a lot of them happen at night here.
A lot of them happen at night.
I was actually on vacation. We were in Hawaii. Oh,
that's right.
Remember?
Yep.
I was super pregnant. We were in Hawaii, and – obviously there's a 4-hour time difference there, and it was middle of the night and our phones just start blowing up, which obviously my in-laws live here. Mm-hmm. And then my stepkids are here as well. So our phones just start blowing up. Are you okay? Is everything okay? You know, and we're obviously fast asleep and lost. So immediately call and check it out. And, you know, luckily everything was fine with our in-laws and the stepkids, but it was surreal. I immediately go to the news app and turn it on to see what's going on, and just your heart just breaks. And obviously, being someone who has worked in news for years, I've talked to people who, you know, have lost loved ones in tragedies like that, and weather tragedies and hurricanes and floods and tornadoes and all of that, and it just breaks your heart to see it happen to obviously this city and our area. And it didn't surprise me to see this community come together and come out for those that suffered. Didn't surprise me, because I know what kind of people live here, and there's a reason I came here 15 years ago and didn't leave and fell in love with this place, and that's because of the people. But I will say this, it was quite impressive, the response.
Always is.
Of and, this and community.
Through tragedy, you find beauty.
Yep.
And the beauty is the people.
But and, 25 and look, souls lost on
25
on that
souls
day.
Lost, and lots of lives changed with the destruction and the houses and the businesses and all of those things. And you know, there's just no rhyme or reason to tornadoes. I mean, with hurricanes, mm-hmm. you get some sort of, you know, visual plan, you know, and they can go different directions, but you know it's there for a couple of weeks.
Or you for, at least get for a couple warning days, sorry. That
yeah.
there's something.
With tornadoes, they just drop out of the sky and boom. Like that storm. I was saying this the other day, I'm the guy that stays up in the house and, you know, if there's a tornado warning or it might happen, and I'm monitoring Nashville severe weather and just trying to figure it out. That way I want everybody in my house to sleep But if there's a reason to get everybody up, that's when I'll get everybody up. And I already have, like, the room ready and all that stuff. And I'm the knucklehead with, like, football helmets in the room for kids. Like, doing what we do, we end up with football helmets. So might as well use them, right?
Absolutely.
So, you know, and to the point about, like, these things, if you just live here, you've been near one. If you've lived here for any amount of time, like, I know one that dropped out of the sky a long time ago. I think it was Christmas Day or Eve. Over in Brentwood on the other side, your side of 65. And my buddy Darren Houck was in his bedroom and like he was sleeping through it, man. And next thing he knows, the sun is out. Like it rolled through that quick.
Yeah.
And the sun is out, meaning the roof was gone from his bedroom. And so the neighbor's boat was in his tree. They ended up as an Allstate commercial, these guys.
Mm.
I was in this building. The one that hit downtown Nashville, and we were in the parking lot, and I shouldn't have been in the parking lot, but I'd never seen a tornado, and I was like, I thought, okay, we're good right now, but like I looked outside, and the sky was like this green color,
yeah,
and the sky was like kind of swirling real slow, and then you look down toward NES. And all those transformers started popping, like pop, 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 pop. I mean, exploding. And then, boom, that thing dropped out of the sky. And we went running inside. I'm getting chills just thinking about it. But
yeah.
We went running inside, and the engineer at the time was a guy named Watt Harrison, who's a legend in this market. And he was like, get the F down. And, like, Phil Valentine, everybody was, like, down with their head between their knees. And so, yeah, that happened that time. And then one time we were doing 3HL from Rippy's when – one, it looked like it was going to drop downtown, but it skipped over downtown and just went right through East Nashville. And we were on the air live during that deal. But anyway.
You didn't go take cover?
No.
Oof.
We're on the air. I had to do my job. Like you were saying, like when you cover the stuff, you got to, I mean, that was my responsibility. We were live on the air. And so I was trying to, you know, warn as many people as I could. Will Newman and his Edley's Barbecue East Nashville store, as we have been telling you, they gave away sandwiches until 5 o'clock today at their East Nashville location to thank their neighbors and their community that supported them through the tornado aftermath. And, you know, we did a show from Edley's in East Nashville. And so we had to right after the tornado hit. And so we were down there and we were encouraging, you know, people. There was a path that you could go, a specific path to get to us. But you had to park out, walk in, all that. And the amount of money and things that people brought still blows me away.
Unbelievable, yep.
We made trips to the Kroger on the corner of Rosa Parks right
Jefferson.
There downtown. Yeah, Jefferson. And that Auto Zone was right there on the corner. That thing, I drove by that today. It's still gone. But, you know, taking supplies and all that stuff. But you're right. Through tragedy, to watch this community grab each other's hand and say, we got this. There's no other city in America like this.
Nope.
615-737-1045. Ben in Mount Juliet. Ben, what's up, man?
Hey, guys. Nuts and bolts.
Nuts and bolts. You're going way back. I like it.
Long-time listener, first-time caller. I was just calling to chime in. I live in Mount Juliet, and my house suffered some severe damage from the tornado. We had a very large, very heavy industrial size air conditioner fly through the ridge beam of our house, and so it was pretty gnarly.
Mm. Everybody is safe.
Yeah, you okay now?
Yeah, everybody was safe. Our dog woke us up, thankfully. She was, you know, nervous as all get out, and my wife heard her paws on the hardwood floor, and she got us up, and I turned on the TV, started watching the weather, and about that time, the power went out, so I told my wife to take the dog and get in the closet, and I ran and got our son, jumped in the closet, and we had about 30 seconds before I started hearing things just, you know, held our house. And so, and then it lasted about 30 minutes. And then about 5 minutes after that, I started hearing people outside my door asking if we were okay, because they obviously saw damage, that we had sustained on our house. But to your point, with the community and everyone helping out, during that whole week, we had restaurants driving through our neighborhood offering free food. Yeah. We probably had over 200 people on my property, you know, helping, you know, take trash out, do anything that we could have asked them to do, they would have done it because we just live in the awesome community that we do.
No doubt.
Thank you, Ben. Appreciate you sharing, man.
Wow. Yeah. Lots of those stories, too, from that day.
We went over to Kirby's house. Kirby got hit, and he had trees all over his roof and everything. And he said the same thing. He said the amount of people that just show up with, like, a crate of bottled water and just hand it to you was something. So, I mean, you can go back to the flood in 2010, man, and how organized. Not only that it's such a giving community, but how organized we get with it, too. It's pretty awesome. That's why we all live here. That's why we all love it. When we come back, we'll look at point spreads with Todd Firm, and that's coming up next. 3HL 104.5 The Zone.
This is the one.
3HL 104.5 The Zone. It's time for our visit with Todd Firm and our guy in Vegas. Bet the Board podcast. You need to check that out. Rate, review, subscribe. Also, Fox Bet Live, weekdays, 3:30, FS1. Todd, what's up? How are you?
Doing very well this afternoon. How are you guys doing?
We're doing good. Do things get crazy when the NASCAR guys come to town?
It would if we were at full capacity for the track, knowing that we were in store for a triple header with the truck race going Friday, the Xfinity boys on Saturday, and then, of course, the Cup Series on Sunday. But with limited capacity, I don't think we're going to see a massive amount of tourism. I think at last check, LVMS was about 15,000 to 18,000 fans would be in attendance. So while it's a lot to be excited about, it still won't be close to the normal caliber of event that we've grown accustomed to.
Normally, when you have a NASCAR race in Vegas, I'm pretty sure that's pretty good. Like the best possible people watching opportunity.
Oh, it's tremendous. There's no doubt about it because you see all the NASCAR paraphernalia. And it was even better when there was only one Vegas race. You'd see people coming in. And I was just getting my start behind the counter at Caesars. Wasn't really a NASCAR fan back then. And some of the conversations I had with folks, the amount of domestic beer they polished off, the only thing that would rival some of the NASCAR crowd that we got out here was when you had the National Finals rodeo coming in, and it was impossible to find a Bud Light anywhere from Flamingo Boulevard all the way up to Sahara along Las Vegas Boulevard.
I mean, when that stuff happens, you just kind of stay away from the strip. I mean, I know you had to work back then down there, but...
Yeah, I mean, it all depends on the kind of crowd. Sometimes you get a lot more energy and enthusiasm. And the one thing I will say, when I was younger, going in the casino every day and leaving the office Friday afternoons, that became infectious and contagious. You like to be a part of it. Now, as I get a little bit more reserved and fall asleep on the couch at 9:30 at night watching hockey in the Western Division, it's a little bit of a different dynamic. But there's no doubt a lot of the marquee events that are on the calendar in Vegas, because they attract such a very different dynamic all the time, it can be an awful lot of fun to get yourself out there and just kind of rub shoulders with some folks who are in town for the marquee event.
Todd Firman, at Todd Firman on Twitter. Todd, jumping over to college basketball, if I'm looking for value from an SEC team during the tournament, is Arkansas that group?
I mean, you look at the way the Razorbacks have performed lately, and I think they had a trap spot, or whatever you want to call it, yesterday against South Carolina. There was some professional money that came in on them. They go out there and they boat race the Gamecocks by 28. You look at the recent run of form, and they haven't lost to an SEC opponent since Saturday, January 16th, when they lost by 31 against Alabama. And you'll make the case that that's the game that really changed things around for this Razorback side. You look at Moses Moody, SEC Conference Freshman of the Week last week for his performances. I think Arkansas checks a lot of the boxes, and for those folks out here, we're familiar with Nevada teams that underachieved, but this Arkansas team feels a lot more athletic, and they can be a very tough draw, a team I think that's got the capability of getting to the Sweet 16.
What does Vegas think about Tennessee?
It's as anybody's guess in terms of what you're going to get from the Vols in a game-in, game-out type performance. I mean, you and I were texting a little bit back and forth asking me what the Auburn number was. I said I made it closer to 3.5, 4. The market opened at 8, and Tennessee goes out there and loses outright to a Tigers team that's taken on water down the stretch. I think when you look at the erratic nature of what Tennessee basketball has been, the biggest problem is the offensive side, where you don't know game in, game out what they're going to be able to manufacture. The defense has been the calling card, but when it comes to the tournament, you have to be able to find a way to get easy baskets. And I think this is a team right now that oddsmakers really have struggled to try and price. And that's illustrated by how you've seen a checkered against the spread record over the last 5 to 10 games.
Kentucky lost again. As we get closer to the SEC tournament, can you actually find value in the Wildcats? Might that be a smart play?
I mean, if you really want to take a flyer, I'm sure Kentucky fans are going to flock to Nashville for the conference tournament. I know there's only 3,400 in capacity, and a lot of those will be handed out to the individual schools. But if Kentucky's a team that can win a game or two, maybe they catch lightning in a bottle. But I'm not running to try and bet them. I actually haven't even seen odds on FanDuel in terms of what Kentucky's price is to win the SEC tournament. This just feels like a lost year for Coach Cal, and it doesn't appear to be getting any better as we come down the stretch.
Big Ten, really good. Illinois-Michigan last night. Michigan gets housed in their own house. Where do you have them? Where do you have Illinois? Where do you have Ohio State?
I think when you look at the way the Illini have played the last couple games without, you know, arguably the conference player of the year in Io DeSumo, who probably finished second to Luka Garza, it's shown that they're just not a one-horse team, that they can go out there, they can play with energy. And when you look at their performances, they've lost one game coming against Michigan State since the middle of January. A huge game on Saturday that'll go a long way, in my opinion, in terms of who has the inside track to potentially the fourth number one seed. I've seen some bracket forecasts that have Alabama there. I don't think there's anything close to the way Alabama has played versus some of these teams at the top of the Big Ten. I really believe that when you look at the Gonzagas, Baylors, and Michigan of the world, they're still a cut above, but no reason to believe that Illinois or Ohio State can't contend. But I think this is a possible letdown spot for the Illini going into Columbus for their regular season finale.
Kentucky and Duke are out. Can North Carolina slide in there?
I mean, trying to figure out what we're going to get game in, game out from the Tar Heels has been anybody's best guess. You look at their performance over the weekend against Florida State, and you go, oh, this team definitely checks the boxes and looks like a tournament team. Then they follow it up with a two-point loss at Syracuse. Not bad by any stretch of the imagination, but the glaring loss came last Wednesday against Marquette, where you're almost a double-digit favorite, and you drop that non-conference game by 13 points. You look at what Roy Williams has put together. I don't think this is obviously one of his most talented teams, not going out on a limb by any stretch of the imagination saying that. But I think given a depleted field, especially when you get into that second and third tier, that North Carolina is in, and probably a team that you don't want to face if you're one of the big boys in the second round, knowing that they have some length, their ability to get to the offensive glass, and if they are fortunate to get shots to fall, maybe Carolina can make a surprise run into the Sweet 16.
Is it still Baylor and Gonzaga versus the field?
That's the way the number looks right now, but the price has drifted out. It was minus $1.20 if you wanted to bet those two teams against everybody else. Right now, you can get a little bit of plus money in that plus 115, plus 120 range. Some books out here even including Villanova in that trio, and the reason Nova gets there is because they were a preseason number one, at least power-rated by a lot of people. I look at this Gonzaga side, and I think they're as talented as any team offensively we've seen in the country over the last 5 years. I mean, we know what they've done in the West Coast Conference. That doesn't mean a whole heck of a lot, but their adjusted offensive efficiency, number one in the nation. And you look at who they beat during the non-conference portion of their schedule. I mean, you beat Kansas to open the season in a convincing fashion, yet dominate Iowa on a neutral court. You absolutely bury Virginia and score nearly 100 points against them. If Gonzaga gets a favorable draw, this is Mark Few's best team, and I think a lot of teams in the country are going to be hard-pressed to try and find answers for the likes of Jalen Suggs, Drew Timmy, and Corey Kispert.
Todd Furman, our guy in Vegas, at Todd Furman on Twitter. I know, obviously, basketball is a matchup sport, right? So it's hard for me to ask you, are there mid-major teams that you're looking at? But are there a group of mid-majors that you kind of keep an eye on to kind of see what seeding they have and who they're playing?
Well, I think the lowest hanging fruit out there would be a team in Loyola Chicago, led by Porter Moser. We saw them make a surprise run to the Final Four. From an efficiency standpoint, this team looks to be very good on paper. I don't think they're as good as some of the projections have them. At top 15 in the country with an overall grade. I worry about the caliber of play that they see night in, night out in the Missouri Valley. But Loyola is a team that has a couple of bigs that can create some problems. A guy like Cameron Krutwig isn't going to be an easy out, even for some of the marquee programs. You look at what he's done, double digits in every game that the Ramblers have played since the calendar flipped over to February. So Loyola would kind of be that team. I'm very curious to see how their draw looks, as you mentioned, and ultimately who they would have to go through. If we look a little bit further down, I'm not even sure they're going to make the field, but a team like St. Louis, a lot of people believed in early on in the season. They've struggled through the Atlantic 10. They may have to win the conference tournament, but I could see a team along that line in the form of the Billikens maybe doing some damage and creating a little bit of value for those folks wanting to take a flyer.
Do you take a look at Belmont if they win the OVC tournament? I know they've dropped their last two, but they won 21 in a row. And Casey Alexander, great coach, but this is a roster with no seniors on it, which is interesting. But man, they were playing at a high level.
Well, and I think Belmont's a team that you obviously go, anything that they can accomplish this year, if they're able to win the OVC and get into the tournament, will be a major learning experience for a group that'll be back next year. We know they dominate league play, and I think that when you look at them finishing up the regular season with back-to-back losses, a little bit surprising. But at the same time, maybe that actually pays dividends. It allows them to refocus, and they're about a $1.70 favorite to win the OVC conference tournament. So I think them getting in, we've seen what this program has done in the past, and it's clearly a team that'll fall in the 13 or 14 line most likely that none of the big boys are ultimately going to want to face. And sometimes it's a little bit better when you come in with less fanfare. The hardest part about trying to gauge Belmont this year versus what we've seen in previous editions, they didn't play anybody non-conference. And I think that's the biggest thing for some of these mid-majors. Right. You don't have those measuring stick games or even going out there and losing by 10 or 15 points in November, December, like we would during a more traditional season.
J.J. Watt to Arizona. Does that move the needle?
It moves the needle in terms of watchability and what Arizona will be able to do on the defensive side. You saw their odds shorten a touch for the division, but still arguably the best division of football from top to bottom. I don't think it helps them bridge the gap a ton to get up to where the Rams are, the 49ers, and the Seahawks. But when you look at what the Cardinals are going to have on that defensive side of the ball, assuming that Chandler Jones is healthy and they elect to bring him back, you could have the potential for three guys able to register double digits in sacks. Hassan Reddick, kind of a breakout story last year. I know he finished the season with 12.5 sacks, 5 came against the Giants. But if Arizona is going to be a little bit weaker in the back end, what better way than to be able to get after opposing quarterbacks, use J.J. Watt in known passing situations, and hope Kyler Murray continues to mature leading Cliff Kingsbury's offense.
Meanwhile, where are we with the Houston Texans win-wise? What do you think?
I mean, this is a team right now that I don't think anybody has an awful lot of confidence in. I know the Texans remain steadfast that they're not going to move Watson, but every day that goes by as we get closer to the draft, you have to think that they begin to lose leverage. And it's rather surprising to me that you're not out there entertaining every single call. If someone wants to overpay for Watson and you have a chance to bring in a veteran quarterback and get a couple of draft picks, the Texans aren't winning now with or without Deshaun Watson. This is a team mired in mediocrity. We saw last year that they fell victim to an early season schedule that put them behind the eight ball. But I think everyone else in the division is getting better. Jacksonville, no doubt, will get their franchise quarterback and start to trend up. We'll see what the Colts get out of Carson Wentz, and the Titans aren't going away anytime soon. So I think if you're the Houston Texans, you try and figure out what you want to do. But at the same time, in a city where all the sports teams are struggling to figure things out, at least the Houston Texans didn't announce this week that they plan on retiring J.J. Watt's jersey before he ultimately hangs it up.
57 days until the NFL draft, and Diana Rossini tweeted out, it's going to be a bloodbath next week. That's definitely something all of you guys will be paying attention to, right, the roster movement.
For sure. It goes a long way. I think a lot of these teams have created cap situations for themselves that are very difficult to try and navigate through. And for teams that may be a player or two away, this could give them the perfect opportunity to add that veteran, that situational player, an extra receiver, what have you. The biggest thing for me, Brent, as I look at this offseason, there are so many teams out there right now that have unsettled quarterback situations.
Yeah.
And I don't think we've seen the last of that carousel playing out, whether it's Washington figuring out if Kyle Allen and Taylor Heinicke are going to be their guy, what the Eagles are ultimately going to do. Will Jared Goff actually start a game as the quarterback in Detroit? And the same thing with the Chicago Bears. So I think it's extremely fascinating. Once the league year ends, we see these cuts, and a lot of these teams begin to scramble to try and stockpile talent on the roster.
That's a good one, Chicago Bears. I mean, that's a team that could seriously upgrade at quarterback if they make the right move.
Exactly. I mean, you get a new quarterback in there that's an upgrade from Mitchell Trubisky or Nick Foles, it's going to put you in contention, assuming that you're able to retain the services of Allen Robinson. And we'll see if the Bears decide to franchise tag. The big thing for the Bears, for as critical as we want to be of their offense, it wasn't the offense that was the major problem down the stretch last year. It was the defense deteriorating a little bit. And we'll see exactly how they handle things there. That's a division for me that I don't think it's a runaway by any stretch of the imagination with Green Bay. I think Minnesota will be a lot better, and with the right move or two, maybe the Bears are in the discussion. The Detroit Lions, though, remain the perennial doormat. I think they can arguably be one of the worst teams in the NFC as they go through a rebuild with a brand-new head coach.
Todd, look, I know you were a goalie, but you are an upgrade to Trubisky and Nick Foles.
I'm not sure about that. You haven't seen me throw a 5 or 7 yard out pass. You might not even want me throwing those old school Nerf turbo footballs in a flag football game. So for me, under center, unless we're kind of running the option, I think that's probably the only offense I'm best suited to run.
I mean, running the option, the outside linebacker comes up. Todd, you might not survive that.
Well, I mean, Brent, the biggest thing is that, you know, 155 pounds soaking wet. I just got to make sure I pitch it. I was probably better suited for more sprint football, though, in the Ivy League. But there's a reason of all the competitive sports out there, football wasn't one I never played in an organized capacity. I think it was hard enough on my parents watching me have guys barrel into me playing hockey and seeing it how I could test my reflexes with 90-mile-an-hour slap shots aimed towards my head.
Did you ever bet on your own college hockey game?
I never bet on my own college hockey games, but I may or may not have set numbers for NESCAC football to try and get a little entertainment and excitement when you had a little three rivalry between Wesleyan and Amherst. And, Brent, it's not coincidence. When some of our bitter rivals came in and I was on the chain gang, it was always 1st and 9 for the good guy.
1st and 9. William Byron wins. Back to NASCAR. Can I get a big-name guy, Todd? Can I get a Denny Hamlin, a Chase Elliott, somebody?
I don't know if it's going to happen this weekend. You look at the odds, and of course, the high-profile names, whether it's Hamlin, whether it's Harvick, Martin Truex, et cetera, all those guys relatively short. And we're seeing some of the younger drivers assert themselves. We knew that William Byron had talent and was just starting to scratch the surface. Wasn't sure it was going to come last weekend. Of course, it cost me a few bucks with a ticket on Tyler Reddick at north of 30-1. His car didn't wake up until about 50 laps to go. But we'll see. I think there's a little bit more parity in NASCAR now. But to say parity, Christopher Bell and William Byron specifically are racing for two of the most well-funded teams in Joe Gibbs Racing and Hendrick Motorsports. So, yes, a little bit surprising, but these guys had talent. They're paid a lot of money, and they're out there not driving around jalopies like the Toyota Corolla I did when I was trying to get my driver's license at 15.
Todd Furman, our guy in Vegas. So, real quick, what do you look at when you're doing your research for race bets? Like, do you sprinkle, like, several guys, or how do you make that work?
You nailed it. That's the key when you're betting NASCAR. If you're going to try and go all in and bet one driver, you're going to leave yourself open for a lot of disappointment. It's the kind of sport where you have to build a portfolio, very similar to what we talk about with golf tournaments, that you want to try and find a favorite or two that you think has an excellent chance. You sprinkle a little bit with some value drivers, and you look for the occasional long shot or two. The biggest thing about it, if you're building your portfolio the right way, you don't have to pick the winner every single week in the race. You try and find head-to-head matchups. That should be the meat and potatoes of how you build your race card. And if you're able to capture an outright winner at prices of 15-1 or 20-1, that's going to put you in a very good position going forward. But it has gotten a lot more challenging over the years because you don't have practice times to work off of. So you're doing a lot more based on current form, track, entire composition and compound. And then, of course, a little bit of history for some of the guys trying to figure out who's going back to a spot where they're very familiar with.
Similar strategy with golf.
Yeah, very, very similar the same way where you're going to study course history plays a big role. You're going to look at current form, and you're ultimately going to try and find prices. And I tell people all the time, and we can say it now in Tennessee because people don't have to go into gray markets to do it, take advantage of all the sports books at your disposal. You'll be amazed when you go through the bevy of options there, whether it's FanDuel, whether it's DraftKings, whether it's Action, whether it's MGM. The difference in pricing that's out there, and if you're going to make the bet on the same driver, why take 18-1 at one book when you can take 25-1 doing the exact same work? It's not hard to move your thumb an extra couple of times or put a few extra bucks in a different account.
Great stuff, Todd. Appreciate you, man.
Always a pleasure.
All right, at Todd Furman on Twitter, Bet the Board Podcast, Fox Bet Live on FS1, weekdays at 3:30. When we come back, we'll welcome the newest member of the Zone team to the airwaves, Buck Rising. Joins us. He's on the air weekdays, 10-1 now. We'll talk with Buck next. Also, OVC final in women's basketball. Belmont takes down Austin Peay 54-50 in the OVC tournament. Belmont will play Friday at 3:30 p.m. The men play tonight. I love the OVC tournament, top to bottom. Really, really good brand of basketball, men's and women's. We'll be right back. 3HL 104.5 The Zone.
Buck Rising.
HL 104.5 The Zone. We continue to grow as a radio station. We have added a new show from 10 a.m. until 1 p.m. weekdays. It's called the, I don't know, Buck Rising. What is the show called, bro?
It's called his show.
It's called Buck Rising on 104.5 The Zone. I tried to make it as self-involved as humanly possible. Hello, friends. Long time no talk.
Hello, Jim Nantz. Yes, that is pretty self-involved, I must admit. And third person, honestly, which is great. I love that. It reminds me of Vince Young days here.
Well, listen, I lobbied for a great many things, and I was shot down. Not too hard. At most turns, it seems that creativity is only allowed to go so far. But yeah, if you want to hang out with me from 10 to 1, I'm Buck Rising, and that's going to be my show. It's going to be a good time.
What the buck? How about that?
Yeah, it's just kind of trying to limit my personal risk because there are so many different ways that I can play off of that. And it only takes one time for me to screw up and forget that I'm not doing the internet show to where I can't cuss.
Oh, yeah.
So I thought I did 3 hours today pretty cleanly, which is an upset.
I mean, honestly, how big a change is that? Because I've gone from one radio station to the other where you're trying not to say the other call letters that you said forever, which is a challenge. But yeah, I mean, when you're doing where you can say anything you want and then you come in here. I mean, we've got a dump button, so maybe a producer could protect you if they like you. I don't know.
I feel like most of the production staff, after having pulling double duty today to keep me afloat, I think they're probably not crazy about me, but I still love them anyway.
Well,
it's good with everything. Like the transition is honestly, like, I felt as comfortable today as I have at really any point, if not more comfortable. I mean, I have done radio to a degree, not just with you guys, but filling in, and I used to do a little more on a semi-regular basis, but like the idea that I can talk for 10 minutes and then just take like a 5-minute break during commercials is a revelation to me. I talk for an hour and a half straight Sunday to Thursday night on the primetime show, which, by the way, coming up at 8 p.m. Central Time on A to Z Sports. Because I say it all the time on the streaming show. I'm not tired yet. But today,
see,
I don't want to sound cocky, but like I thought I did fine.
You did get fired on your first day.
That's right. You worked a full day and didn't get fired.
Yep. What was my text to you? It's all downhill from here, brother.
Yeah. Listen, Dawn. The only good things, and honestly, I owe the two of you and Mickey Ryan and Blaine Bishop and everybody that has incorporated me into what you guys do on a regular basis, a great deal of credit. But damn that, Dawn, it's all stock up. Come on now.
Well, somebody paid us. Like, we just get these envelopes full of cash. I don't even know where they come from. That's why you've been on the air with us. I don't know.
It's me. I'm Egyptian. I have connections with Saudi oil. I send you envelopes, but let's not get into that for IRS purposes.
All right. For people that don't know you, what are they going to hear on the Buck Rising show?
You're going to hear me, but you're going to hear a collection of my friends in and around sports and really pop culture as well. And we're going to do it town hall style. It's going to be just kind of involving you as the audience in the conversations that I have with a lot of my friends in sports, be that, you know, from the Titans, people who cover the SEC and who are involved with the Vols. I've been fortunate to kind of develop a really, really deep roster of people that I can just hit up at any given moment and that will come hang out with me and have a good time. So, you know, we hope that people will take to that. And like I said, day one was pretty solid. We had a great time with Titans GM John Robinson, Will Compton, Jason Fitz from ESPN, and those are the kind of people that you can expect on a regular basis because the zone's a big bad MF-er and everybody wants a piece. So
I think that's the next T-shirt.
Too.
Yeah, I'm gonna text Allison right now. We got the next billboard. Yeah. The zone is a big bad MF-er.
Listen, I got dangerously close to saying the actual word, but I caught myself because I'm a professional.
Hey, while we're here, I know we're talking about your new show, but I mean, let's be honest, that's a heck of a way to start it all off. That's a nice lineup that you had today. What stood out to you about J-Rob's comments? We got just a few minutes here, but what stood out to you the most?
Well, I think you know what I'm going to say, Dawn, because I think that you have a very strong opinion about what it is that John Robinson said, that he has not yet approached players currently making exorbitant amounts of money for the Tennessee Titans about contract restructures. I found that to be interesting.
I hope he's lying.
You know, say that again. I'm sorry.
I hope he's lying.
Well, listen, it is the season of the lie. But honestly, John has always been pretty transparent, or as transparent as somebody in that position can be, with media as a way to reach the fans. I go back to Combine last year, the last normal NFL event that any of us had pre-COVID, where he was very, very clear and honest about the 2019 Titans are done. The 2020 Titans are going to look a lot different. And then he shipped Jarrell Casey off for a seventh-round pick in something that shocked most people, but he told you what he was going to do. He told me.
Who then was released, by the way.
And then he was released. By the way, that's the best thing John Robinson did last offseason.
Yep.
But I think that, you know, when it comes to when John says, you know, we're focused right now on more on extending our guys before we kind of address what may be out there in free agency, because there's going to be a lot of names that people recognize, I take him at his word on that. In fact, I think that things are trending well for Corey Davis based on what I'm hearing. That's kind of the way that things are going. And so I take him at his word at that. I think the opting not to approach guys about restructures or restructuring is interesting, given that you have a very high-priced corner who's on the wrong side of 30. By the way, happy birthday, Malcolm Butler. And you are going to...
He's not on IR, tackle, by the way.
Not on IR, fresh off it. Me neither, turns out. And so we have that in common. But, you know, between Taylor Lewan, Malcolm Butler, Kevin Byard actually already took a restructure before last season pretty quietly. And maybe it gets down to the wire the closer that we get with those kind of things. Maybe he's trying not to rock the boat too much before he has to in that regard. But in this year, it's almost a necessity that he has to do that at some point. But I think, just based off the conversation that we had today, people can get the podcast in the 104.5 The Zone podcast feed. I think he's trying to make sure that his house is right before he goes about trying to shake things up for outsiders.
Love it, brother. Welcome to the station. We look forward to rocking and rolling, man. Push forward.
Yes, thanks, bud.
Man, I'm hyped.
All right.
You guys are stuck with me now, and I'll look forward to doing it tomorrow and, you know, until the end of time or as long as they let me.
At Buck Rising on Twitter. See you, Buck.
See ya.
All right. 3HL bonus hour is coming up next. Stay tuned. 104.5 The Zone.